You're listening to Dogcast Radio on www.dogcastradio.com.
Some dogs look at you like you're insane.
Notice your dog's intelligence is different to yours.
We're killing our dogs. Wild and Woolly welcome wagon.
The outside of a dog is really, really good. The inside of a person.
Centricity.
Hello, and welcome to episode 82 of Dogcast Radio. Coming up later, we talk to Toni Shelbourne about her work with wolf conservation.
Sometimes you pick a lead up and they're like, ooh, going for a walk, hurrah, you know, and they run up to you. So, it's something they enjoy. And you couldn't make a wolf do anything it didn't want to do.
We also have the Dogcast Radio news. But before all that, we have a treat for you. Sometimes I meet a real character through Dogcast Radio, and there is such a character in the next interview. Sometimes outstanding training goes with an outstanding personality. I'll leave you to decide if that's true in this case.
Today I'm talking to Vladislav Reuterpel, who is known internationally as the Russian dog wizard. You may have seen him on The Late Show or CNN. And he's worked in Russia, in Europe, in USA, and as I say, he is the dog wizard. Hello, Vladdy, and welcome to the show.
Hello, Julia. Thank you so much for having me. Pet owners, listen up, because when the Vladdy talks, human and canine listen, and soon you will understand why.
Well, that's true. I mean, I've been reading up about you, and not only do you speak five human languages, you speak Doglish, don't you? Now, what's that?
It is. I think, Julia, that I broke the code of the dog language. It is very serious. Initially, I learned how to speak to the dog in its own language by my mute and deaf dog trainer mentor from Russia. He could explain me by the movements, by the noises, eye contact, body language. So we humans have every means to communicate with our pets in the language they can understand, which is Doglish. Let me tell to you or explain to your listeners some type of the basic vocabulary from this Doglish. For instance, how many times, Julia, we are hearing pet owners telling to their pets, like, no. I sincerely believe, by the way, most dogs in America think the word no is their nickname, because Americans use the word no so many times without any consequences. Russian pet owners is no better than Americans. They say them, yes. It's no matter what the word you say, it's matter what the sound the dog is hearing. Instead of yet or no, I use the canine sound of F. In English, it's spelling H-A-A-T. When you say F in English, in Doglish, the dog is hearing, which is growling, which just means, don't move, I'm going to bite. My opposite, Julia, how we praise our pets. Good boy, good girl, good boy, good girl. Especially men. Most of my clients, Julia, it's a type of confession, you know, and I gotta tell you, most of them ladies. So they told me their boyfriends and husbands cannot even praise them well. So don't say to the dogs, people, good boy, good girl. Just say, good boy. And the dog is hearing in Doglish, ooh, that's how canine mama praises its own child. And we are barking commands. We don't say, let's go, Julia. We say, let's go. Down, come. And the dog is hearing. So that was very important. Now, body language. Short, lean, over the shoulders, when you say sound, means sit. Long, lean over the shoulders, of the dog shoulders, I mean, means down. Moving backwards from the dog, follow me up. Moving forward, invading personal space, means stop. And leaning means sit.
you obviously you communicate well with dogs, but now being a trainer, you need to communicate well with the owners as well, and sort of tell them what they need to do.
Oh, tell me, Julia, tell me about that. I think betraying the owners is a harder part because the humans are more hard-headed than their pets. In a lot of cases, you know, like I always say, it's a hard to train to teach the old dogs the new tricks. But the humans mostly the old dogs. That's what the problem is. You know, the people are creature of habit. That's the dog is. But the humans really like to do the things their own way, and very difficult. It's very difficult for them to change. And this is the most difficult part. And I have a special gift to coaching the humans. It's not very unusual. When the wife tells me, you know, Vladi, you know I love you, I follow with your rules, and it's not my rules, it's a canine rules. I'm not just creator, I'm messenger. But my husband will not. Okay, bring him in, bring this husband in. And I talk to him, look in his eyes and say, listen, Mike, you have two choices in your life, you know, or follow the rules, and you'll have a best pet in your house. And if you don't, you'll have a hell in your household. That's what it is. It's just so simple. And let me explain to your listeners the three rules or three tips, I would say, which can turn any unruly canine into the loving pooch in the matter of days. Can we ask your listeners to grab a pencil and some paper so they could write it down, this one?
Okay, yes. And if they're out on a dog walk or something at the moment listening to us, we could put this on the website.
Okay, and if they're driving, we don't want to make them any accidents.
No,
so we'll
no.
have everything on the website with you.
Yeah.
Okay, let me tell you three simple rules, which is every canine mama knows, and the human mom, maybe not. Rule number one, never give to your pup, to your dog, any commands which you cannot enforce. Doggy mama never say anything which she cannot enforce. Number two, always reinforce your commands. And number three, never repeat what you said. It is so simple. Doggy mama is not just a creator of the rules. She's also reinforcer of those rules. Listen, pet owners, your world will never change unless you will make it change. Dog training is so simple. Just follow the rules of the doggy mama. And I know for Europeans, it's a little bit more easier because we know in Europe we have a more, I would say, I don't want to use the word authoritarian, but I would say more firm concept of the raising our kids too. You know, I know, Julia, how your mom raised you, but the mom of the Russian mom is like canine mom. If she says once, that means that's all. We Europeans serious about this. If the canine mom says no, you can call whoever you want. It means no.
Yeah.
So that's important things. It doesn't mean you have to be rough or whatever. Let me give you, to your listeners, one tool which you can reinforce those three simple rules. Go to your hardware store and buy the clothesline. It should be very thin. It should be like the shoelace, mm-hmm. something like this. String. It should be cotton. So maybe cut two pieces, 8 feet and 15 feet.
Mm-hmm.
And after that, connect the end to the dog's collar and let it just hang around. So if you say your dog, like, Max, come. And the Max, you know, Julia, dogs listen to us when nothing better to do. It's something better than listen to us, like some another stranger walking with the dog or the dog wants to bark on something. They will tell you, forget your mama. Okay, I'm not going to come. So, but you have to say once and after reinforce it because doggy mama has a 1 second rule. She says, and if the dog doesn't, she snaps. So you say, Max, come, or Heidi, come. And the Heidi says, forget you, mama, I got to do something else. You know, you grab this rope, okay,
mm-hmm.
and make her come toward you, and after kissing her, and it's all over. No discussions, no democracy when it comes to raising the pets. Just say once. If the dog doesn't do that, make the dog come to you, and after kiss and hug, give the cheese, American cheese, or Polish, so give them Polish kielbasa or Russian vodka, whatever comes first, whatever country you guys are in, and caviar works too, but no, don't hold grouches. I mean, say once, doesn't make the dog come, and just kiss and hug, be done with this. Why this line, and have this line all around your pet all the time for the, maybe, of course, when you're not supervised, unhook it, but every time when you supervise it, put it on, and just go for your battle. Just say, make my day. You don't want to come, just go ahead. And the dog will not realize, because this line is giving the dog feeling of being on its own, but you always can reinforce it, and gradually people cut this rope shorter, shorter, and shorter, and you know what? And the dogs is like, it's like Pavlov. You can condition them so easily to do what you want them to do. If you will always winning those little battles, you will win the war. It is so easy.
Yes.
I just revealed for you one of my really big secrets. So, you know what? Hopefully KGB did not listen to me. Because I trained the dog back for the intelligence service as well. But I was not part of them. I just trained the dog. So. In general, you know, you forgot to mention, Julia, I would like to give you correction.
Mm-hmm.
To your listeners, my international experience, the reason why I speak five languages is because I worked in many countries around the world, and including trained dog on the Russia-China border as the custom dogs. I trained the dogs for retrieving the broken net on ship or mail delivery between military ships. Portuguese water dog is a great dog for that. We used. I was a first-degree national champion in Russian Schutzen, which is in America would be Super Bowl of the dog training, which is actually one time trained dog for the blind people and for a lot of customized training all over the world in Canada and United States. And, you know, over the years, when I came in America, I just thought, well, I don't need to train the dog here for attack or for, you know, being spy dog. All what I need to train them to stop peeing in their household, stop jumping, stop barking, stop biting, and such and such. But it's like you're asking brain surgeon, you know, to put the shot in the dog's blood. It's so simple. And again, your listeners can see a lot of free tips from my website, socaldogtraining.com.
Yeah, yeah, that's great. I mean, obviously, I've been looking at your website, and there is a ton of information there. It's really, really good. And I mean, you've given us three really good tips there, but I was looking and you were saying dog training is about two things. And the first is getting that proper relationship between you and the dog, you know, getting the hierarchy right.
Exactly. And I'm glad so you brought this point, because people misunderstand what the dog training is. They think that dog training is just sit, stay, calm down. It's just automatic response to the words. No. The proper dog training is just establishing and promoting proper relationship between the pet owners and its dog, based on the human authority. If you don't have a human authority in the relationship with your pet, I mean, you just don't have a right framework. So it's called competing of stimulus. So if your dog wants to chase the squirrel or the cat or bark on someone or pulling you down the street like bulldozer or, you know, jump on someone, and you tell your dog no or whatever you use the word, you know, the dog will look at you and say, why should I listen to you? You are my equals. We're just buddies. We just live together. Equals do not take authority from another equals. So, you know, all our obedience training, I think, Julia, works toward one end. As soon as you are giving commands, you automatically assuming of position of authority. And if the people jeopardize their authority every day and every step on the way, like, you know, sleeping with their pets, allowing them jumping on the furniture, you know, don't get me wrong. And I know in America sometimes when you tell the people like this, they look at you like you just ask them to commit a murder because people want to sleep with their pets and such. But nothing wrong about this if your dog is following the rules. I mean, know. You can give them privileges back, you know, if they follow the rules. My dog, my German Shepherd, can bring Pepsi Cola from the refrigerator. I don't care what that dog sleeps, really. But if that dog would be not following the rules, I would take this, take that privilege away. I always tell my female clients, listen, ladies, if I slept with you in your bed, I would not listen to you either. It's just like a man.
And I bet they understand.
So, you know, I think about myself, Julia, like I'm well-bred dog. If I like something, I lick. If I don't, I bite. I don't have a backstabbing mentality. I cannot lick and bite the people at the same time as so many people I met everywhere around the world. It's not just, it's everywhere that people are good people, bad people. But, you know, I always follow one guidelines. I always tell the people not what they would like to hear it, what they need to hear it.
Mm.
Yeah, because otherwise I will never. You see, like you said before, the only way I can succeed in my training, if I put the owner on my side, you know, yes, most of my ladies like me, you know, yes, maybe my blue Russian eyes has something to do to that. But mostly about result they're getting. But, you know, you can believe or not, but some of my clients, upscale ladies, after second or third lesson, start to cry. And I ask them, why are you crying? Did I offend you? No, Vladi, we just realized, listen to me attentively, we just realized that behavior problems with pets, with our dogs, were just symptoms in our life. We were so unsuccessfully in relationship with the humans for the same reasons. See, I, Julia, I'm like Dr. Phil of the dog training. My rules, which is pack, it's not really my rules, it's the rules from the pack society. We humans are also pack society. We have a work pack, we have international pack, we have a family pack, and the rules are the same. So I'm teaching my clients, mostly females, because behavior problem with dogs. So the thing is, I teach them stand up for themselves in any relationship. Basically, I tell them, every leash has two ends. If you don't pick one, someone will pick another one. Another one end of the leash. Today it's your dog, tomorrow it's going to be a coworker whatsoever. So it's no matter what you say, it's matter what you've done. Every species in this world, including human and the dogs, must know where their limits are. If you don't show it to them, they will show it to you. And this is the law of life.
It would be great if we could talk at that point, because I think some people, when you talk about sort of, you know, showing your dog where the limits are and setting, you know, setting the rules, there's a misunderstanding there that you're sort of going to be, you know, cross and angry and aggressive and harsh to the dog. But you don't say that at all, do you?
No, it is not at all. And I know what are you talking about, because let's say you're from England, mm-hmm. and England, and if we go a little bit far, it would be German, French, it's going to be completely different ideology in the dog training, and they would not care what you just said, because in those cultures, it's not because they want to do something harsh, it's just because they're less sensitive. They're treating dogs more like the pets, I would say, like the animals, not like the humans. And I understand where this is coming from, because I have a lot of friends in England. And as a matter of fact, the Dr. Dunbar,
yes,
which is a we met with him a lot, and you can see my personal picture with him from my website, socaldoctoring.com. We had some beer with him. He's a great man. And but I said to him once, listen, Dr. Dunbar, if every client, Americans, clientele and the European clientele different. In America, if you're not going to get the result quickly, they work so much here. They are working literally 24/7, and they don't have so much patience. If you're not going to get some type of the result, that the dog's going to go somewhere. I mean, they're going to be, you know, go to the Humane Society or something. So you need to create some type of the results. Now, you're absolutely right. You don't need to be people be aggressive. What you need to be more assertive. It is a much different. Aggressive people stay on somebody's feet. assertive people stay on its own feet. The way how you walk, and you need to walk with authority. Did you, Julie, see how the opera walks on the stage? Opera walks with authority. Opera walks on the stage as the Russian tank. You know, she just owns it. She has her own attitude. She's exuding power and authority. The way how you look, the way how you talk, the way how you present yourself make a big difference the way how the dog percepting you. You don't need to be harsh. You don't need, as a matter of fact, there is almost no physical corrections at all. But there is the doggy language. This is exuding this authority, and the way how you can communicate with the dog, it really mean a big differences. For instance, if your dog is barking, instead of just saying no, 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 like I said, you need to sharply move forward. You just clap your hands and make the noise and move forward and freeze. Why freeze? Because the dogs bite each other after freezing stage. Dogs communicate all this into stage. Body language showing something, and after they freeze, that's the first stage. And second, biting stage. So if you are frozen after you said something, the dog think the next step will be you're going to bite. See, this is their language, which I'm using very successfully. Another great device I would love your listeners will check it out. It's named Pet Convincer, which basically was invented by me. What it is, you know, you push the button and this compressed air coming out. It is a great device, soon will be available for the general public. And again, people can acquire it for the website.
Mm-hmm. I mean, we have to mention that sort of people come to you from all over the place, and you are sort of people come to you when they think this dog can't be, you know, we can't do anything with this dog. And then you do manage to do things with these sort of last resort dogs, don't you?
Yes, I specialize in the lost cases, when people think or hope is lost. As a matter of fact, since I moved to the Southern California, now about probably 2 months here, I already was published in many, many magazines. And I would like to tell you one of the things which is very important for me to say. Since I opened my business about 10 years ago in the United States, I did not have any PR person who would represent me. See, if you have money in this country, everyone can become famous. Just, you know, get a good PR person and they will put you all over. I never had it. It's a very easy verifiable. I have no one who stays behind my success. What stays behind my success is the result. Again, if people would visit my media room, they would see so much publications, video, TV, and you know what? All of them solely based on the result, because you will see it's not a feature about the Vladi. In this feature, you talk about the problem dog, the dog who is basically sometimes was about destroying himself because he had so much separation anxiety, which was chewing himself out of the crate. You know, that's blood and teeth sometimes all over the carpet. Boy, I cannot tell you what type of the cases I'm responding, or the dog jumps and wants to find the owner and he jumped from the balcony through the glass, or becoming so aggressive so the people thinking about euthanizing him. But again and again, what I would like to really be focusing here, all those problems, all those behavioral problems didn't come overnight. So I try to teach the people here, listen people, prevention is better than the cure. So in relationship with the pets, you know, if you will establish yourself as the leader early in the pet's life, if you will socialize that pet, exposed to a lot of dogs and humans when the puppy goes for the critical stages of its developing, if you would take your pet with you everywhere you go and prove how good they are performing in different settings, it's not a big secret. In Europe, the dogs, everywhere you go, because I still believe we have a little bit more authoritative, more kind of firm concept in our relationship. And I think because of that, the dog's becoming more acceptable member of our family, where we can take them with us everywhere they go, we go, and not prisoners in our backyard or under house arrest. So a lot of my great American clients who have high expectations, that's why I love to do it. I love to teach the pets, go with them on-leash and sometimes off-leash where it's appropriate, so that people will take them here in America everywhere they go and enjoy their pets everywhere under any circumstances.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You have a great quote on your site, which I think, you know, sort of, in a way, sums up what you've been saying.
If you treat your dog as the human, your dog will treat you as the dog. You know, you can think your dog is the little guy in the fur coat. You can take that dog in your bed to sleep with. You can maybe bathing with your dog in the same bathtub. Maybe your dog is toilet trained, or you're feeding your dog caviar with vodka. Whatever you do, it's still the dog. And if you treat the dog as the human, eventually your dog will be treating you as the dog. I'm not against to treat. It's kind of interesting because you probably would not expect it from me, but I do believe in treating the dogs as the humans. But before I do that, I treat them first as the dogs. That's what my concept. I believe some humans must be treated as the dogs before you can start treating them as the as the humans. I'm meeting these people almost every day, I gotta tell you. In other words, I believe in concept of tough love. If you're tough, your pet is going to behave. When he is behaving, you can be loving again. But you cannot have it both at the same time. You cannot eat your cake and have it too. So start with the discipline. Start with the structures. The structures involve make your dog wait before you go in and out of your doors. Make sure you always eat first. And your dog is watching, are you eating? And not allow even coming, approaching to your dinner table. You know, make sure you do not put the behavior problem pet in your bed. Just make sure that dog may be sleeping in the bed, maybe in your bedroom, but in the dog bed, in your dog bed. So you're on the bed and the dog is down, and this is a hierarchy. So all what you want to, in order to get a great result, just go get some sleep, and your dog is watching you, and you're on top, and he's down. This is hierarchy. See, I saw my grandfather was the famous Soviet biologist who was conducting Pavlov type of the behavioral research with the farm animals, and I even saw the chickens in the chicken house were located according to their rank, with the rooster on the top. Look, Julia, where the judge sitting in the courtroom. Always on top.
Yeah.
That's what it is. I think the biggest problem in the relationship with the pets, just understand the conflict of the cultures. You see, we humans are creatures of democratic society. At least we would like to have democracy everywhere.
Mm.
And it's a great concept. It's a great concept for many people, for many countries, not maybe for all of them, but for the most countries, it's a great concept. But when it comes to the dogs, most dogs need as much democracy as the penguins need underwear in the Moscow winter. You know, they don't vote. You know, the dogs don't speak in English. They don't preach democracy. They don't share Americans' values. And again, if you will be Democrat for them, you know, they will show you, you know, what does it mean to be authoritative creature in its life. So, in other words, and again, I don't want that people get some concept about anything rough involved. And again, they can see my videos from YouTube or from my website. It's a lot of subtleties involved. Tone of voice, body language, talking to the dog in its own language, eye contact, sharp sounds, and such and such. And again, I would highly recommend them to get DVD Obedience for Life, which the method I described there is the first and only United States patent painting dog training method.
That's brilliant advice. Thank you ever so much for that, Vladdy.
Most welcome, and I just truly enjoy speaking with you. And if your listeners would like to hear more me on the radio, they can go to XM Satellite Radio, channel 158, and my show's running every Saturday, Sunday on XM Satellite. I'm the part of the Animal Radio Networks, which running across across America and also through internet across the world.
Excellent. Well, thank you for that, and I'm sure you've helped many, many people and dogs.
Yes, I have. I have many, many people and dogs, and you know, as the clients, and as a matter of fact, I have about 5-6 clients. I provide in-home training, so
yeah.
Every day I get up and just travel around from one house to another and create some miracles in their household and show the people what doesn't mean the magic of the dog wizard.
To experience more of the magic of the Russian dog wizard, you can visit his website, socaldogtraining.com, where there is a wealth of information about Vladdy, his training methods, and some of his highly entertaining appearances on TV and radio. If you have a problem you think Vladdy could help with, do let us know and we'll talk to him again. Humans have externalised their wisdom, stored it in museums, libraries, the expertise of the learned. Dog wisdom is inside the blood and bones. Donald McCaig. You're listening to Dogcast Radio on www.dogcastradio.com.
Hello and welcome to the Dogcast Radio News Desk. I'm Nick.
And I'm Kate. Emma Roberts, star of TV series Unfabulous, has been giving an insight into that well-known show business no-no of working with animals. While filming for the film Hotel for Dogs, Roberts reveals that she had to do her best work all the time, because if the dog got the scene right, then that take was used. She and the rest of the cast were kept on their toes, trying to ensure that they were not upstaged by their four-legged co-stars.
Meanwhile, the film is doing its best to help homeless dogs. Dog food company Pedigree promised to make a financial donation to dogs in shelters for each ticket sold for Hotel for Dogs. Pedigree has been promoting its adoption drive since 2005, and by the end of 2008 had donated more than $1 million to shelters across America. In North Queensland, traps have been set in the hope of catching a 3.5-metre-long crocodile, which is suspected of having eaten a number of dogs. Locals have seen dogs chasing the croc, only for the croc to turn round and chase them right back. Fishermen have even reported the croc stalking their dogs.
Let's hope officials get their teeth into the problem before the croc gets his teeth into any more dogs. And from a snappy crocodile to a cold snap in Michigan, USA. Nathan Seeley had borrowed a car to aid his search for his lost dog. Things went from bad to worse, though, as first he drove the borrowed car onto the frozen Black River, which is apparently a common practice in winter. Disaster struck when Seeley got out of the car to look for his dog, leaving the keys in the ignition, with the engine running, and somehow managed to lock the doors. Slowly but inevitably, the heat from the engine melted the ice, and the car sank into the freezing cold water. Seeley must now get the car out of the river or face a fine. And by all accounts, he still doesn't have his dog back.
And speaking of wintry weather, in Devon, England, a young woman is paying grateful tribute to the dog who helped save her life. While out on a walk, John Richards became puzzled about what his boxer dog Boris was so fascinated with. It turned out to be what John thought was a body, and was actually Zoe Christie, who had got lost in the dark and was lying in a field in the grip of severe hypothermia. It was only when Boris drew John's attention to Zoe that he raised the alarm. Zoe was airlifted to hospital, where she spent 2 weeks in intensive care, but is now back to full health. She feels a special bond with Boris and has vowed to keep him supplied with bones for the rest of his life.
And finally, dog fans in America have the subject of President Obama's prospective dog to keep them guessing. Apparently, the choice has been narrowed down to a Labradoodle or a Portuguese water dog. The Labradoodle is not actually a breed, but rather a cross of Labrador and Poodle, and is regarded as controversial by many pedigree breeders, although it has established itself as a popular choice. Labradoodles may or may not shed, depending on which breed their coat resembles more. On the other hand, Portuguese water dogs have hair rather than fur, and while they don't shed, they need regular grooming and trims. Offers of pups and dogs from both breeds have been pouring in from private citizens and shelters across America and Canada too.
So, no pressure on the first family then? Well, there is bound to be criticism whatever the choice they make, so let's just hope that at least they will be happy with their dog. And they're certainly setting an excellent example by thinking the whole thing through and preparing carefully. And that's all from us today on the Dogcast Radio News Desk. Goodbye.
A well-trained dog will make no attempt to share your lunch. He will just make you feel so guilty that you cannot enjoy it. Helen Thompson. We heard in the last episode of Dogcast Radio about Tellington Touch from one of the UK's foremost authorities on the subject, Tony Shelbourne. Tony has another passion, though. Wolves. She is an education officer and senior wolf handler, and I'll leave her to tell you the rest.
I work for the UK Wolf Conservation Trust, which is a little non-profit organisation, and we have 9 socialised wolves that we keep in huge, lovely, big enclosures. And we're there to educate people about the plight of wolves, mainly in Europe, because there's lots of work being done in other parts of the world. So we raise funds and awareness for projects in Europe, as well as just teaching people that, you know, although it's better for wolves in some countries now, we've still got a long way to go, and there's lots of wolves out in the wild that need us to help, need our help, basically.
Yeah, yeah. Now, how did the 9 wolves come to be with you?
Most of them on site are wolves that are either what we would call surplus to requirements. So they may have been born in a zoo somewhere, but there were too many wolves in that pack and they didn't want to increase their numbers. So they've come to live with us. Or some of them have actually been rejected by their mum and needed a home. They couldn't go back in with their pack once they'd been taken from removed from the original pack. They can't really go back in because, again, the numbers might be too much. There might be instability in the pack. So they've come to us at a very early age to be hand-reared. It's either hand-rear or basically not a very good outcome for them. And that means we've been able to socialise them to humans. So they're all happy to be around people, which means that the public can come and interact with them. You can stroke them, you can photograph them. We have students doing research work with them. And they do all their behaviours out in the open. And because they're happy to be around people, we can put them in these huge enclosures and people can still see them. Because our wolves all run to the fence to say hello to you. Well, if you go to a zoo, often what happens, they're captive bred wolves, but they're not socialised to humans. So they're frightened of you, so they run away and they might hide up and you won't see them unless you put them in very small enclosures. And of course, that's very stressful for wolves because normally its home territory would be, you know, could be up to hundreds of miles. So our wolves just love it because... Well, they have the life of Riley, really. They have the best food, the best care. They get loads of mental stimulation. They get to go out of their enclosures and go for walks, you know. So, yeah, they have a good time, but they also are very important as ambassadors for their wild cousins.
Yes, yeah. Now, I was going to mention sort of how much, you know, how much can you interact with them? Because sometimes with you know, wild animals in that way, you know, if you think the animal is stressed by you being there, it's not enjoyable. And at other times, you know, if people are saying, now, don't do this, don't make eye contact, don't do this, don't, you know, you're thinking, oh my goodness, this, you know, this really is a wild, dangerous animal. But yours, you know, sound almost more dog-like than that, don't they?
Well, they are still wild animals and we need to treat them as such. So, of course, there is so much health and safety that goes towards it.
Yes.
All of our all our handlers are put through a very rigorous training program. So the person who's always handling the wolf on the front lead, because we always have 2 leads attached, and again, it's another health and safety thing. Those people know the wolves very intimately. They have a rapport with them. They have an understanding of the wolf's body language. They're able to calm the wolves down if the wolves become a little bit excitable. You know, they can really read the wolves. And that's the thing that really keeps it safe, is that we have total control. We have total knowledge of how they're going to react in a certain situation. And, of course, we wouldn't use a wolf that we didn't know was 100% happy that day, sometimes you go in and you call them in to go for a walk, and some of them don't want to come. So you say, well, you can't catch a wolf if it doesn't want to be caught. So you just leave them and you take the ones who do want to go. You know, like us, they have moods, they have good days and bad days. And because we've got the 9 wolves in the 3 separate packs, you know, we can pick and choose, and we can give some of them will have a day off from working, some of them will come out and work. But to be honest, you know, sometimes you pick a lead up and they're like, ooh, going for a walk, hurrah, you know, and they run up to you. So, it, you know, it's something they enjoy. And you couldn't make a wolf do anything it didn't want to do. So if they didn't enjoy it, they wouldn't do it, and they would tell us so. They really love to be around humans.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, lovely. And can you tell us a bit more about the 9 wolves that you've got?
Yeah, like I said, we've got 3 packs. We've got our North American pack, so they're like grey wolves. We call them North American because they've come from a very long line of captive bred wolves. So we couldn't absolutely be sure that they are true grey wolves. And they've got, that's Kodiak, he's the male, he's 14. Now, he's the oldest wolf we've got on site. And 14 for a wolf is actually really old. In the wild, they probably wouldn't survive any more than 6 or 7 years.
Wow.
He's in retirement, obviously, because he's an old boy, and he just gets to potter around and lie in the sun and all of that stuff. And he lives with 2 younger sisters, Juma and Dakota. Juma's still working. Dakota, unfortunately, has cancer. However, nobody's told her that, so she doesn't really realise. The kind of cancer she has, you know, the diagnosis for her would be, for a dog with the same cancer, would be that she would have been dead about 1.5 years ago. But she's doing brilliantly. She has lots of alternative therapies as well as the traditional medicine, and she's doing really, really well. And her sister Juma still comes out and works, and she's still very fit and healthy. And actually, Juma is the best wolf we have on site to deal with people. She's fantastic. She'll go up to people in wheelchairs. She'll let autistic children stroke her. She's just the best pro wolf we've got. She's fabulous. We've also got our European pack, and that's Alba, Lunca and Latea. And they were actually born on site. There were no European wolves in this country at all. So we imported some from Europe and bred these 3. So they've been with us from day one. And they're a really interesting pack. We think they probably had grandparents that possibly were wild. So they're much more kind of in your face, much more kind of, I suppose, wild wolf-like. They are great fun to be around, great fun to handle. Alba, the male, did something a bit silly about 3 years ago and broke his neck. Ran into a tree stake while he was playing with his sisters, wasn't watching where he was going. Common thing that happens in the wild for wolves. But because he's a socialised wolf, we were able to nurse him back to health. So he had lots of different therapies. We did physio on him and T-touch on him and goodness knows what else on him. And within 5 weeks, he was back up on his feet, which was great. And he's still a little bit wobbly today. He's probably about 95% back to his original function. But he's happy. He plays with his sisters. He still can beat them up if they really need to put him in their place. So he's pretty good. And our last pack is our Mackenzie pack. So they are Mackenzie River Valley wolves, which is a subspecies of the grey wolves that come from Canada. And they're our youngsters, our babies. We're saying that they're about to turn 3, but we're still calling them our babies because we've all hand-reared them. And they are just fab. The 2 girls are black, Nosy and Mai, and they were born at Dartmoor Wildlife Park. They were rejected by their mum. And Torak came from the Anglian Wolf Society. And we call him Torak because he's named after a character in a children's book, Michelle Paver's Chronicles of Ancient Darkness. It's a series of 5 books. The first one's called Wolf Brother. And the main character is called Torak. So because Michelle's a patron of ours, that's why we call Torak Torak. And he's a favourite with the kids because a lot of them have read the book, so they come down to see him. And he's massive. He's the biggest wolf we've got on site. And when he stands on my shoulders, his head towers above mine. So luckily, I'm his feet friend. So, so I usually just get a nice lick rather than anything else happening.
Yeah, oh, brilliant. Now, how easy is it sort of giving them vet treatment?
Oh, the simplest thing in the world, really. You just put it in a meatball or a hot dog sausage and you just give it to them and they eat it. Because our wolves are just, because they're happy to be around humans and we've hand-fed them as babies and all of that stuff and they trust us. Now, occasionally, if it's a strong smelling thing, we might have to move them onto it slowly. But they're also so foodie, just like our dogs are. So give them the right incentive, the right piece of meat. That's why you can give any drug to them. For medical, like, for example, if the vet comes in, because, like I say, they're socialised to humans, we just call them on, pop them on their lead to just contain them. And the wolf just comes in and examines them as if, you know, you're like, just like your dog would be examined in the vet, except we don't put them on a table or take them to the surgery. You know, we've had stitches being taken out of, suture wounds being removed just by the wolf just standing there. We don't have to sedate them. It's actually really easy and very stress-free for the animals because they are so socialised to it. And as babies, I pick their feet up and look in their ears and open their mouth, just like we do with the dogs. So they're used to being handled.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, saying that, how trainable are they?
Well, wolves being wolves, they have about the intelligence of a four-year-old, and we all know what four-year-olds can do. So training is probably not the right word for them, because we don't do sit-stay come training, we don't do this and the other. You can't house train them, because these are animals that just move all the way, you know, they're always moving. They destroy your sofa, so not very trainable in the fact that, you know, you wouldn't want to do competitions obedience with them or something, because you'd ask them to do it once, they might do it, you'd ask them to do it again and they'd look at you and say, why? Why am I doing this? There's absolutely no point to it. So they're very, very independent. From sort of 5 months up, they become very independent of you, and they really don't need you. And there's been scientific proof to say that if you gave a wolf a problem to solve and you gave the dog a problem to solve, that's the same problem. The dog will always look back at the handler to ask them to help. You know, if you give your dog a treat ball the first time, sometimes how do I do this? A wolf will never look back at the handler and ask for help. They will always work it out themselves. And they are immensely brilliant problem solvers. You know, they'll work out strategies for hunting. If that doesn't work, they'll change it to something else. Our wolves, we have to double lock everything because they watched us as babies unlocking the doors. So they just unlock them themselves.
Oh my goodness.
We have to lock everything and padlock it so they don't let themselves out.
Yeah. Oh, crikey. So they're a handful.
They are, yeah, but in the most fun way.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Oh, lovely. Now, you mentioned Tellington Touch briefly there. Which aspects of Tellington Touch are you able to use with them?
Oh, body work. I do body work on them all the time, really. For Albert, because of the spinal injury, it was just a perfect way of rehabbing him and just kick-firing his neural pathways back into place. But you can use a little bit of ear work just to calm them if they're a bit excitable and you want them to do meet and greets. Dakota, our one with cancer, she gets T-Touch to help her just feel better and to balance her body out. I wouldn't dare try and put a body wrap on a wolf because it would just rip it out your hands and disappear. It'd be off into the distance with it. But the body work you can do really easy, and they actually really love it. They respond to it really well.
Oh, so obviously they, you know, from what you said, they enjoy interacting with, you know, you or the public that come to see them, don't they?
Definitely. And I think with wild animals, you know, we've got a duty to keep them as happy and as stress-free as possible. And for me, that means, you know, having a relationship with them, giving them lots of mental stimulation and keeping them entertained, as it were. And although wolves will spend the majority of the day sleeping, because that's what apex predators do, you know, if they run around, they expend more energy and then they need more food. But we try and keep them in a natural rhythm as possible. So, for example, in their most active times, which is dawn and dusk, they're always out in the enclosures so that they can play, run, hunt, do whatever they want. The enclosures are big enough for them to take pheasants or voles that maybe they're living in there with them. We might give them a stuffed melon. So we might take the seeds out of the melon and put all their favourite treats inside. So they've got to work out how to get it out. And then they eat the melon after they've eaten the treats. They like the melon as well. So there's lots of things we do for them to keep them sort of happy. And they just love it, really. And often students, if they're doing research stuff, it's either through food stuff or it might be we might play them a sound of a different wolf howling and they'll get to howl back. And it's all mental stimulation for them. And, you know, they are just the happiest wolves I've ever seen, really. They just really do have the life of Riley.
Oh, I think the thing is, as long as the wolves are happy with it, which obviously they are, I remember Steve Irwin, you know, the crocodile hunter.
Yeah.
And how he worked at his zoo was he said, if people can meet an animal, then they will go away thinking, wow, I want to conserve that animal. I want to help that animal.
Yeah.
And I do think, if you can meet them, that's what inspires people.
Absolutely. And with us, if we didn't have the walls and we just did education talks, no one would come and see us. They come to see the walls. And I've had so many brilliant results of school children who have come over with their school. I remember a fantastic story of a little boy who I'd let all the children howl to the walls, and the walls had responded and howled back to them. And this little boy came up and he was talking away to me, can we howl to the walls again? And I was saying, oh no, they're a bit sleepy now. Let's leave them. He took hold of my hand and he was chatting with me all the way back up to the education room. And just as the children were getting back on the coach, the teachers came to me and said, we've had a bit of a breakthrough today. And I was like, oh yeah, what's that then? Well, that little boy that was talking to you, well, he's autistic and he doesn't speak to adults, but he'd be chatting away to me because the walls have been so interesting. And they've been taking photos behind our backs to show his mum and everything. So it was just such a fantastic story. And that's the kind of results we have on so many different children and adults, you know. And we have children who have maybe been excluded from school that will come up or had very traumatic things happening in their lives. And the walls just really bring themselves out themselves. And they go away and do loads of artwork and write poems. And it's really fantastic. And our motivation is that one of those kids could turn out to be the next Steve Irwin or the next David Attenborough, you know, the next big conservation person. And that's what really drives them to do our education work.
Yeah, yeah. It sounds wonderful. Where can people find out more and sort of how to visit you?
All the information will be on our website, which is ukwolf.org. And you'll be able to find out to become a junior member or a member and come for a walk with us, seminar information about walls. There's student resources on there in the education section. So there's lots of information. There'll be links from there as well to other wolf organisations as well. So, yeah, all on the website. The only thing is that we're not open to the public, so if you're thinking of just turning up, don't bother because you won't get in. But because we're a small organisation, it has to be, and we don't have a zoo licence either, so it has to be by invitation only. You have to be on an event or be a member of ours and come on a planned day. But once you're a member, then yeah, you can come down and see them, come for a 2-hour walk with us in the woods and interact with them.
They sound like wonderful animals, don't they? To find out how you can join the UK Wolf Conservation Trust and support their work, go to the website ukwolf.org. And for more information on Tony, including an article on applying Tellington Touch to wild animals, visit her website, tellingtontouch.co.uk. The first rule in successful dog training is to be smarter than the dog, which is why some breeds are easier to train than others. Author unknown. Don't forget, the Buddy's Diary book is still available for $10.95 or £6.35. Or you can download the book for $3.95, which is £2.31. It should be available in most parts of the world, and you can, of course, use the ISBN number to order it into your nearest bookshop. You'll find all the information you need on the Dogcast Radio site. Lee Gibson is an agility expert who competes, judges and trains at the highest level internationally. His methods are fantastic, and he's brought out a DVD to enable anyone who can't get to him for training to follow his teaching at home. Buddy and I spent many happy weeks training with Lee, and I was surprised to discover that agility is as much a mental puzzle for the handler as it is a physical activity. To find out more, visit leegibsontraining.co.uk and have a look at the Dogcast Radio blog to find out about our experiences working with Lee, including the funniest thing Buddy's ever done. Till next time, look after yourselves and your dogs.
Thanks for listening to Dogcast Radio, available from www.dogcastradio.com. That's dogcastradio.com. If you'd like to get in touch with us, and wherever you are in the world, we'd love to hear from you. You can do so in a variety of ways. By phone from the UK, you can contact us on 0121 288-0922. From the US, you can contact us on our American number, which is 315-849-2022. From any other country, you'll need your international exit code and then 44
021-288-0922. You can contact us on Skype with the ident Dogcast Radio. That's all one word, Dogcast Radio. By email, you can contact me on julie@dogcastradio.com. When contacting us by email, if you have the facilities, please record your questions or comments and send them to us as an audio file. That way we can include them directly in our programme. We can accept most formats, for example, WAV, MP3. All these methods of contacting us can be found on our website, which is www.dogcastradio.com. And as ever, the final word goes to Jenny.
A man walked into the office of a psychiatrist and sat down to explain his problem. "Doctor, doctor, I've got this problem," the man said. "I keep hallucinating that I'm a dog. It's crazy, I don't know what to do." "A common canine complex," said the doctor soothingly. "Relax, come here and lie down on the couch." "Oh no, doctor," the man said nervously. "I'm not allowed up on the furniture."